Welcome to the Love O Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Mahadeva Padma. Padma is a painter, illustrator, and a designer. She is the creator of the best-selling Osho Zen Tarot and the Tao Oracle. Padma's art has been exhibited in the United States, Europe, and Asia. I'm so happy to have Padma on the show, and I hope you enjoyed. Padma, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you. And how are you?
I'm really excited to speak with you. To start, tell us a little bit about you and how you came across Osho.
Well, my journey began really when I was a small girl, and I lived in a very, very privileged part of the United States. Life was a bed of roses, you could say. And from an early age, I began questioning that there must be something more or something else to life than what I was, the milieu in which I was living. I began questioning what else is there, and I started my own little personal quest into just trying to discover the meaning in different religions. This quest for wanting to know more about the world and wanting to know particularly more about what was called religion. And it went on throughout my high school years and so forth. And when I was in my early 20s, I became a member of an esoteric school called the Eureka Institute. And that was where I first learned of meditation. And it was a school that combined many, many different esoteric means for discovering more about oneself, for turning the energy in, for experience ecstasy through dance. There were all these different aspects to the school. And I was immersed in all of this and wasn't looking for anything else. I thought that was going to be the be-all and the end-all of my life, was just to be involved with the Eureka Institute. But my boyfriend at the time, who wanted to take me on a birthday gift holiday to Virgin Islands while we were flying out of New York, he's sitting there reading a book by an Indian guru. And I'm going, why would he be reading such a book? He was involved in the Eureka Institute. Why would he be reading such a book about some Indian? And it was called The Way of the White Clouds. And I was curious because he was deeply moved by it. And he was one of the trainers at the Institute. And it was odd to me that he would be searching when I felt he'd already found the answers. And shortly thereafter, he said he was going to make a journey to India to see this master. And I said, great, have a good time. I'll see you when you get back. And 10 days before he was due to leave, we were having dinner in a restaurant in New York City. And I found myself out of the blue saying, I want to go with you to India. Now, that was a huge shock, not only to him, but especially to myself, because I had no plans, no interest in India. And certainly, I didn't even have a passport. So it was a bit, you know, like, okay, how are you going to do this? He said, well, I'm going in 10 days. See if you can get your passport together. I did and went with him to India. And we made an appointment to go to what was called Darshan that night. Now, I didn't know anything about anything. I was just sort of with my boyfriend on a trip, you know, for a few weeks in India, and that was going to be the end of it. I was going back to New York. And we went into the Darshan. We sat in the Darshan porch, and the door opened, and in came the master. And in that moment, the minute his fragrance entered the room, and there was a very, very specific fragrance, the minute he entered the space, it was as if a tectonic plate inside my being had shifted and everything changed. I realized that what I was perceiving with my eyes and my heart was a reflection of my own being. And I broke apart. I completely melted. There was no understanding of what was happening. There was just this extraordinary sensation that went all the way through. I was the first person called up, and Osho said, "Are you ready for sannyas?" I didn't know what it was. And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "You are. Close your eyes." I closed my eyes. He put the mala around my neck and gave me my name. He said, "Your name is Ma Deva Padma. Deva is the divine. It is the bridge between the devil and divinity. Padma is the lotus flower that grows out of the mud. And the more stinking the mud, the more beautiful the bloom. You are that flowering. Now realize it." Those words, that fragrance, his looking so deeply in and reading me like an open book was the earthquake that changed my existence this lifetime. He then said, "You have been with many Buddhas, but you have never stayed. Now you stay with this Buddha and you go in. Then you will know love." It is very, very strange because I felt that there was a form of meditation that I would be needing to learn while I was there with him, that he would prescribe some magic vehicle for me to follow, and then I would be in bliss. And I told him, "There are many things that I love. I have always been creative. I like to dance. I like to sing. I like to paint. I like all these things." He said, "Creativity is your meditation. You simply create. That is the vehicle for your realization."
So I understand your path with Osho was about creativity. Your meditation is creativity. So you are famous for being the creator of the Osho Zen tarot cards, which are known not just within the Osho community, but even outside. I know lots of people who actually have come to know Osho because of your cards. So I'd love to hear of how the Osho Zen tarot cards came about.
In the late 1980s, in what was called the beginning of Pune 2, the master was still in the body, and there was a sannyasin woman named Upasika, Jian Upasika, who had written to Osho that she wanted to create a tarot deck. And she said that she wanted to have me do the artwork. And Osho said Padma should do the art. She and I met. She had a very particular format that she wanted it to be done in, and we began with me doing some sketches, and we worked together for about, it might have been as much as a half a year, and then Upasika left Pune and went back to Europe. Now, Upasika never returned, and over a period of 4 years, with all the other things that were my usual ashram work, I continued to, bit by bit, create the artwork. And it wasn't until 1994 that enough of the artwork was completed. Anybody that's seen it understands that the inspiration is the master. The process of having each of those images arise so that they could be illustrated came through being in his presence, listening to discourse, sitting in silence. None of it was pre-designed or sketched out. They all came very immediately. And creating with him was always more of a revelation than something that was worked at. It's very difficult to speak about a creative process because it's a process that is not involving words. It's evolving through feeling and sensation. I always experienced the master's words in color and in pattern. To me, he was the ultimate artist. And so it was like I was a kind of an empty cup. I would be just sitting with an openness to receive whatever imagery came, and I didn't interfere in or try to tweak or alter, even sometimes them being very strange and having nothing to do with traditional tarot. I just stayed with the purity of what was being offered. And life was influencing that. There were times in my room when I'd be sitting at the drawing table, I could actually feel the master standing behind me, watching me draw. He wasn't physically there, but his presence was there. And maybe I would have the radio on the BBC, and maybe one of the cards in the Osho Zen Tarot, which is a card for fighting. I was, how am I going to do an image for fighting? And one night, listening to the radio, there was a report about riots in Los Angeles. So here I am sitting in my room working on this tarot deck, having wondered, how am I going to find fighting? And there I'm listening to this incredible news reportage of people killing each other in the streets of L.A. and feeling the master standing behind me. And so the image that has come through is from that. Now, you know, being an artist, you're already an oddball. But my medium was somehow absorbing from anywhere and everywhere without searching for it. Things would just come. And I would work with that. Whatever came, I would work with that.
Well, that's really beautiful to hear the creative process of an artist. And I love the way you put it, as thinking of Osho as the ultimate artist. It's very beautiful. And also, I appreciate that the effort you're making to put into words, using your rational mind to describe the creative process, which by definition is beyond that. I personally never been into tarot reading. And in fact, in my mind, Osho and tarot reading don't go very well together. My primitive understanding of tarot reading is something like predicting the future, or that many people use as a way to reinforce the tendency not to take responsibility over their own life and change their own destiny. What's your view on how to use the cards?
I come from the perspective that there is an opportunity for realization in every moment. Tarot is a mirror of the moment, just like the bird that's twittering outside my window right now, or the cat that's purring on the chair beside me. Absolutely everything is an opportunity for you to witness and realize all the dynamic of what is occurring within you and around you fully in the moment. And tarot cards are a set of images. A tarot deck is literally like anything outside the window. It is there for you to perceive and witness yourself in the context of that. I am that. It is a gift for realization of where one is in any given moment in time. And if you are asking existence the question of, am I worthy? How can I better feel happiness? Whatever your question may be, you pick a card and the answer is there. It reflects you in that moment. Now, the deck that I've created, because it is affiliated with the master, it is through the mirror, the vehicle of his way. But what I'm saying to you is, existence is the big tarot deck. That's the best one, because it's endlessly and eternally showing us ourselves in any given moment. All our questions can be asked there. But the Osho Zen Tarot has become as powerful as it has become in the world as a vehicle, obviously, for Osho's extraordinary guidance, but it is because it is speaking universally in a language of symbols that are universal, that people see them and they go, aha, oh my God, and they get it. Now, I didn't make that happen. My cleverness did not make that happen. My skills did not make that happen. That is a gift that has come through And it has become as huge as it's become because it was a blessing to me, and therefore the blessing has gone out into the world.
Well, that makes lots of sense to me. And I think I can relate this to one statement I read on your website, which says, "Osho Zen, our work, is a bridge from the master to the world." Can you expand on this?
Yes. Many, many years ago when I was living in the ashram, I used to pray. And the prayer was, "Let my creativity support your work." How and why? Just let my creativity, let the creations support your work. That prayer was answered in a thousand ways, but the way that is most known to the world is through that deck of images and the book that accompanies it. And that became the door for the master to enter into the lives of literally millions of people. When it first came out, many, many bookstores never even carried any Osho books. Now he is everywhere. So that prayer was answered. Prayers work.
And I thank you so much for that, because you're contributing to making the master's work known to many people through your art and this beautiful Tarot Zen card. You said something before that really struck me, and thinking of Osho as an artist, and in fact made me think that Osho himself was an artist, not just,
yes,
as a metaphor of him being the absolute, greatest master, but he was a painter. Some of his art is still available today, and his own signature, to me, is beautiful painting. It's very artistic. So as an artist yourself, and as an Osho disciple, what does the art produced by Osho communicate to you?
Osho's art is autumn leaves and spring blossoms and the starkest of winter nights under the full moon. Osho's art is the art of existence. It is the very ground we walk on. It is all of life.
Okay, well, that's incredible. I'm speechless, and because I personally admire art and I love art, and I have to say, looking at Osho's art, I get confused. I don't get it. But maybe that's probably one of the tools and devices that Osho used to help us go trick the mind. So
I think this is funny. I think that you think, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think that you are thinking about something that bears no thinking about, but it is an invitation to experience it. When you walk in the forest, you are hearing things, you are smelling things, you are touching things, and you are immersed in color. His artwork is that. It is an invitation to be immersed in something that means nothing. It has no meaning.
I love
it. It is simply what it is. Let yourself, there may be signature paintings that appeal to you, and they may be the ones that are like being at the beach or sitting in a meadow in the spring. But maybe for me, they are the ones that are harsh and windblown and stark. And for someone else, it may be the desert on a hot day. They are invitations. He's saying in those signatures, experience the isness of whatever it is that comes through this in you.
I think art means different things for different people, and it can serve different purposes. It can be used as a form of expression, as a form of catharsis, to transform negative energies. It can be used for political reasons, either to criticize the status quo or for propaganda. So what is art for you personally?
It is my life. It's my existence. It's this lifetime. And probably a hell of a lot of other lifetimes. It's breathing. It's dreaming. It's resting. It's struggling. It's everything. It's the full Monty. I can't be, it is not something separate from my existence.
Wow, okay. So you are a full full on artist, and I understand you also live in a remote part of the world. You live in Australia, in nature, and I understand you kind of created your own sanctuary. So how did that come about?
I've been very fortunate to be living with my real soul partner. You know, my husband, Ashika, actually he's another deva, is a stone sculptor, and he moved to Australia. We then joined forces in Australia. We began a studio together. We got married, and we are two very independent artists who really like to be left alone to our own madness and our own evolving of whatever it is that is longing to come through our hands, through our hearts. We need a lot of quiet time to be able to stay open to receive what really wants to be given form. And so we've pulled away from living with others, because we find that it's incredibly easy to become distracted and get caught up in trends and all sorts of other things. So we live out in the nature, the sound of the birds, etc., around us, the wind, the sunrise and sunset. Our lives are very quiet, and we share and do and endlessly create. But what comes out of the studio goes out into the world, and we prefer to remain rather reclusive. And I've always been a bit of a recluse. Even all the years that I was living in the commune, I was a recluse. I hardly ever left my room.
Well, that resonates with me a lot, because I'm also, I have the tendency of just being on my own and just feeling right about that. and I wish, you know, if everything goes well within the few years time, I can hopefully retire somewhere in nature. That's the goal. So what are you working at? What are your current projects and activities? What are you up to?
I've just completed, this is funny, this is like a kind of a joke in a way. Typical, I'm always, you know, sort of getting up to doing new things, and I decided I was going to create a calendar for 2019. Well, here we are in October, and 2018 is nearly done. So everybody's saying, oh, it's too late in the year for you to do something like that. Anyway, created a calendar. It's got some wonderful inspiration in it. Osho is in it. And I found out just yesterday that the cost of producing this thing and then sending it out to all the friends in the different parts of the world is going to be prohibitively expensive. And my husband and I decided this morning that we're going to do this. And yet it's going to be yet again another project where we don't make any money on it at all. We're just simply going to treat it as this is another creation that begs to be made, and we'll see what happens with it.
Well, you don't have a client. I'll definitely get one of your clients next year. So you find one.
the thing is that, you know, you do these things and you don't think about all the practicalities. You just sort of do it, and then you think, oh, wow, that's so great. I love it. If I was in wherever, I would want to have that on my wall. And then you find out that the printer in America and da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da, and it goes on and on. We just this morning before this Skype session, we're driving all over the place to get costs of, you know, sending things. And it's so complicated and so expensive. But at the end of the day, the whole thing is the joy is in the creating, the ecstatic bursting of energy that comes, you know, it's in the creating. And then you trust, okay, if this is meant to go further than the studio, there will be a way. And if it's not, my God, it was wonderful doing it.
Absolutely. And let's see if this podcast can help in any way. So where people can find you if they want to get to know more about your work and perhaps even get a calendar from you for next year?
We're going to be posting on our website probably in another week. There will be something posted about the calendar. There will be a webpage that will have information if people are, you know, expressions of interest. And I'm gathering prices now of what it's going to cost in Australian dollars, what it's going to cost in US and in euros, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I'm trying to get all that sorted out. And we'll post that online, and people will be able to see a sample of what it looks like. And if anybody's interested, great. Because the thing that's really cool about this calendar is I'm treating it as a calendar with no holidays. The only days marked are the equinoxes and the full moons. Everything, all the other days are, every day is to be treated as a day for celebration. Every day is to be treated as a day to honor, rather than, okay, on Christmas we're this and on Halloween we're that and on, you know, all days are opportunities in 2019 to experience each day with absolute joy, openness, sharing, celebration, and feeling the blessing of what it is to be alive.
Wow, that is so beautiful, and I love it. And I hope that everyone, even, you know, I talk about the office life, that you go and Friday, everyone is kind of excited. They say, hey, yes, today is Friday. And I look at them and myself, yes, it's so pathetic. And then Monday, everyone is miserable. I mean, what kind of life is this? So your calendar is a great invitation. Every day is a wonderful day.
It's an opportunity That's right.
to celebrate. We need
every day is Friday.
Every day is Friday. Yes. Okay, Padma, so we are heading towards the end, and I've got three final questions for you. And the first one is, what's your morning routine? If you have, you're an artist, so this can be a tricky one. So how does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
When I wake up, it's usually still dark, and our bed faces a huge window that looks out onto treetops. And I lie in bed and listen to the first birds, and then I watch the sun coming across and touching the tops of the trees and then drifting down in it with its golden light onto the Tibetan prayer flags that are hanging in front of our place. And so that's the way the day begins. Then I do some stretching in front of that same window, and my black cat comes and stretches with me. My husband brings me a cup of tea, and I sit, and sometimes he sits with me, and then we go and have breakfast.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
My favorite meditation is dancing to the sound of nothing. I like to just dance. Often in the supermarket, actually.
Okay. Okay, so dancing in the supermarket is your favorite meditation.
Yeah. Okay. The thing is, you know, sometimes you'll be standing there in front of the, you know, organic vegetables and the reds and the greens and the yellows and oranges and all looking so plumped up and beautiful, and the feet start moving, and it makes me feel joyful. And I dance.
You make me feel joyful now, thinking of you dancing in front of vegetables in the supermarket. It's so beautiful. Okay, so the last question is, you lead the OSH experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with OSH today in 2018?
It means to enjoy dancing in front of vegetables in the supermarket.
Short and sweet. I love it. And in fact, that says a lot. Well, Padma, it's been a real, real pleasure connecting with you and talking to you. And as I said before, I really had an experience of connecting and talking to an artist. And
One thing. Now I'm going to do the advertisement. The website is www.embraceart.com or thetaooracle.com. And the Embrace Art website is where people can find out about this calendar if it ever happens.
That's great. And at this point, for marketing reason, if I may suggest, you can post a video of yourself dancing in front of the vegetable.
Okay. I'll have my husband do a video of it. He always laughs when he sees me.
That's beautiful. Well, Padma, thank you so much for sharing your story and your love for Osho and your work and the incredible contribution that you are doing with your art in terms of spreading Osho's love, energy, and work with people. And so I love what we're doing, and it's amazing. And thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I've enjoyed it, and I very much respect your efforts that you're putting in this. It's beautiful.
Thank you for listening to the Love Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveoshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.